I didn't think of it as control. That's the part that still fucks with me. I thought of it as logistics, timing, opportunity, the kind of thing a decent man does when he sees a woman cornered and doesn't look away. She cried in my car the first night. Not loud, no theatrics, just this tight, quiet breathing like she was afraid the sound itself would get her caught. Her name was Althea. Early 30s. Brown skin, careful hair, church clean voice, even when she was falling apart. She said her boyfriend had started checking her phone, that he'd shoved her once. I told her she could stay at my place, just until she figured something out. I remember how good that felt. The decisiveness of it. The way she looked at me after. Like I'd just opened a door she didn't know she was allowed to walk through. What I didn't see, what I refused to see, was how quickly the story started bending around me. How fast help turned into leverage. How every option she had quietly rerouted through my approval. I didn't drag her out. I didn't threaten her. I didn't hit her. I just made sure leaving him meant staying with me. And I told myself that was different. I met Althea through church, technically. Not during service, after. In the parking lot behind the building on Constant Spring Road, where everyone lingers pretending not to eavesdrop. I was there with my cousin Devin, helping him unload equipment for the youth program. Althea was sitting on the curb, phone in her hand, staring at nothing. She didn't look messy or dramatic. That was the thing. She looked like a woman trying very hard not to be noticed, while something inside her cracked. I asked if she was okay. I didn't say it like a pickup. I said it like a question with weight behind it. She looked up, surprised, then smiled like she'd practiced that response her whole life. I'm good, she said, which is never true when someone says it like that. We talked. Safe things at first. Church. Work. She worked front desk at a small dental office in New Kingston. Lived with her boyfriend in a one-bedroom he rented from a friend of a friend. Everything about her life sounded provisional. Like it could be revoked if she stepped wrong. I liked that she trusted me. Or maybe I liked how quickly she needed to. The first night she came over, I told myself it was temporary. I lived alone in a two-bedroom apartment my aunt helped me secure after she migrated to Canada. I had space, a couch, a lock on the door that worked. I told her she could take the room. That earned me a look. Soft. Relieved. Grateful. The kind of look that feeds something ugly if you're not careful. She talked that night about how her boyfriend Marcus wasn't always bad, about how he paid most of the rent, about how when he drank, he got quiet, then sharp. How he'd say things like, "You would have been nowhere without me," and then laugh like it was a joke. I nodded. I listened. I didn't interrupt. I let her build the case herself, because that's what made it feel real. Inside, something was settling into place. Not lust. Not yet. Something cleaner. Something righteous. I was the good man. The stable one. The one who didn't raise his voice. The one with options. I'd lived in Florida before my visa expired. I had family abroad. I knew systems. I knew how to move. She didn't ask me for help leaving Marcus. Not directly. She just kept saying she didn't know what to do. So I told her what she could do. I started driving her to work. Told her it wasn't safe to take taxis alone in the morning. I started keeping track of her schedule. I told her to block Marcus for a while. Just to breathe. I framed everything as protection. And maybe, at first, it was. But here's the part I don't get to soften. I liked how quickly she stopped making decisions without me. How she'd ask before messaging a friend. How she'd pause, then look at me. Like I was the authority on her own damn life. That felt earned. That felt deserved. Because I wasn't like him. That's what I kept telling myself. The shift didn't come all at once. It never does. It came in little adjustments. Suggestions that sounded reasonable. Boundaries that only went one way. When Marcus started showing up at her job, I told her to quit. I said it was dangerous. I said men like that escalate. She hesitated. Money mattered, but I reminded her she was safe with me, that we'd figure it out, that she didn't need to rush back into another bad situation just because of bills.
I didn't say you owe me. I didn't have to.
She stopped talking about going back. Stopped talking about other options. Every future plan ran through my mouth first, like it needed my blessing to exist.
I told myself I was preventing her from making a mistake, from going back to abuse, from letting fear win. But I was also closing doors. When her sister called, asking why Althea hadn't been home, I stayed quiet in the kitchen while Althea took the call in the bedroom. After, I told her families don't always understand, that church people love gossip, that too many voices confuse things. She nodded, said, "You, right." That phrase did something to me. Slid under my skin and set up shop. I started paying for things, groceries, her phone bill, new shoes when hers started peeling at the sole. Every time I handed over money, I made it sound casual, like nothing, but I watched her face, watched the calculation shift. Dependence doesn't need chains. It just needs consistency. The first time we slept together, she cried after. Quiet again, controlled. She said she didn't want it to feel like she was replacing one situation with another. I told her she was safe, that there were no expectations, and I wasn't like Marcus. That was a fucking lie. Because I expected gratitude, loyalty, compliance dressed up as appreciation. When she talked about maybe staying with a friend instead, I reminded her how unstable that sounded. When she mentioned applying for a visa program her cousin told her about, I said those things take time, that she shouldn't rush into anything without a solid plan. My plan. I framed my hesitation as wisdom, as patience, as care. But really, I was afraid of becoming unnecessary. That's the sickness of false saviors. We don't want the person free. We want them safe with us.
And I didn't see how ugly that was until the gratitude thinned. Until she started pulling back emotionally. Until she stopped asking my opinion as often.
That's when I tightened the net. I brought up everything I'd done. Not directly. Never directly. Just reminders. Casual inventory. Remember when I picked you up that night? You know if I didn't step in, you'd still be stuck there. I said it gently, smiling. She heard the threat anyway.
She left when I wasn't home. Packed two bags. Took the shoes. Left the rest. There was a note on the counter. Short, apologetic, devastating. She thanked me. Said she needed space. Said she was staying with her sister for now.
I sat on the couch for a long time after reading it. Angry, confused, sick in a way I didn't have language for yet. Because she didn't leave Marcus for herself.
She left him through me.
And now, she was leaving me. The same way. That realization cracked something open I'd been protecting since the beginning. I wasn't the hero in her story. I was a bridge, a temporary solution, an exit ramp. And worse, I'd helped build that role for myself. When people at church started whispering, it hit hard.
Questions about why she'd moved in, why she'd left so suddenly. Her sister didn't shield me. Marcus didn't threaten me. Nobody needed to.
The truth sat there on its own. I'd used her crisis to feel powerful, to feel chosen, to feel necessary. And when that wasn't enough anymore, I tried to hold her in place with care. That's the part I can't scrub clean. I didn't save her. I just made sure she couldn't leave without passing through me first. And now every time someone calls me a good man, it lands wrong, heavy, sour, because I know what I was really doing. And I know exactly how close I came to becoming the thing I swore I wasn't.